Hello, and welcome to the show Gold Squadron Gaze. It's the podcast where two Star Wars-loving gays break down each episode of their favorite Star Wars TV shows, while also being gay as hell. I'm your host, Bradley Brower.
I'm your other host, Charles Rogers, and Bradley, I can actually hear you.
That's all that we ask for, the bare minimum on this show.
I would say probably about 60% of our meeting that we had prior to recording this episode was just testing Bradley's new mic and making sure we can actually hear it.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully I sound so gorgeous and beautiful. I just have the voice for radio. I have the voice for podcasting. So hopefully this new mic just enhances my already beautiful features that I have.
Uh-huh. Bradley, you have in the top five annoying voices I know in my life, which is why we do a podcast, because I'm also in the top five annoying voices in my life.
Love that.
I can't stand the sound of my own voice. I have to listen to it multiple times a week. I have two podcasts that I'm on that I have to listen to.
So you went to the best possible thing you could do is just listen to your voice all the time, even though you hate it.
Absolutely. It's exposure therapy. My therapists have told me that exposure therapy is good for me, and getting over the sound of hearing my own voice, I'm doing it by podcasting. That's been my secret ulterior motive the entire time. Well, before we get started with the content of our episode today, some stuff happened. As of recording this episode, the strike, the SAG-AFTRA strike, ended after 118 days, which means that all the workers are back to work. There are no picket lines to cross. Per SAG, specifically, influencers can return to what they were doing before. Basically, the work stoppage and everything is over. There is no picket lines. Now, SAG still has to ratify the tentative agreement into the actual agreement. That's currently being discussed right now. It's looking likely that it's going to be ratified by the membership. That's not 100% a guarantee, and it's certainly more contentious than the WGA. But that is the current situation as of recording this episode. If that changes, we will let you know. But Bradley, we have a plan. We certainly have a plan on what to do coming up now that that strike is over.
Right.
We discussed the plan at length over multiple days. You could say we had our own little contract negotiation over what order we want to do things.
Right.
We're replicating the negotiations, except one of us didn't walk away for 3 months and refused to talk about it. So here's what we have decided. Here's the Gold Squadron plan for the rest, the next little bit. We're going to finish out Darth Vader, as promised by me to a lot of people. So thank you for everyone who reached out to express to me that they wanted to make sure that we finished. We are going to finish Darth Vader 2017. That's going to take us off mostly to the end of the year. We may do something else. We may take 2 weeks off instead of one. Hard to say. Starting on the first of the year, we will be back with Ahsoka. Now, we recorded an episode zero prior to Ahsoka coming out. So we're going to play that episode, and then we're going to go back to, at long last, Bradley, after nearly 6 months, going to go back to doing the fucking TV shows, which is what this podcast is supposed to be about.
I know. It's so funny because like I kept thinking about it and I was like, gosh, if we come back in the new year, I'm going to have to just change our intro so that it's just generic instead of specifically TV shows. Because at this point we have, I know like 90% of our content has been the TV shows, but also like a good chunk of it has not been TV shows. So I feel
We may have to look into doing a rebrand, because I've been keeping my finger on the pulse of what content we're doing is like getting listeners and also getting engagement. And some of the stuff we've been trying has been getting a lot of engagement that I was surprised. Like, we definitely have had a drop off because we're not covering the current TV shows. But there's some stuff we may want to look at continuing doing in the future, because I like attention and also like spreading positivity about certain elements of Star Wars. But we are going to go back to TV shows now. With the twins, after we're done with Ahsoka, we're going to go back to Vision Season 1. We will at that point release the episode on the twins. That's right. Sort of the plan as of now, because we kind of want to keep all of that together. So, tentative plan, finish Vader, do Ahsoka, do the rest of Vision Season 1. We don't know when Skeleton Crew is coming out. That was supposed to be the next show. We don't know when The Acolyte is coming out. We don't know when Andor season 2 is coming out. There's a lot of things we do not know at this point.
Yeah, next year's a literal blank. Like, we have
next year's a literal blank. I know more about 2025 than I know about 2024.
That's so sad. That
Which
we
is
know.
Insane.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that we know more information about stuff that's probably not even going to happen than stuff that, like, is supposed to already have been set in stone. And then they're just, like, up in the air at this point.
Yeah. And I noticed, too, like, the minute the strike ended, Netflix put out a fuckload of trailers. Like, trailers for everything. Like, clearly stuff they right. had been holding back.
Yeah, they were like, ooh, we want all of our people to talk about everything, and now they can.
Speaking of people talking about things, it is nice to see the Ahsoka cast get to talk about the show.
Finally. I mean, we can probably talk about it more later on, but real quick, we can talk about it. I like seeing the cast, like, posting their behind-the-scenes photos and, like, their memories from shooting the show, especially the stuff with Ray Stevenson, you know, and they wanted to post stuff, you know, remembering him, and it's like... They were probably very conflicted. I know they did. I think they did share something about that, because it's a little bit more like, well, give them some grace. You know what I mean? Like, because, you know, he passed.
I remember they had shared a couple of things, and it wasn't like promotion the show. It wasn't talking
right.
about the show.
It was more promoting him than it was anything else. So.
It was more like remembering him. So it right. wouldn't have crossed anything. But now they can really talk about their experiences, which is also giving me a more like spoilers for the episodes that we're going to do. I have kind of a negative opinion of the overall show. I like the show. I enjoyed watching it. I have some very strong critiques, but I will say that it is improving my own recollections of the show and my own experience with the show to see just how much love and care was put in by everybody who was working on it. Not just like Dave Filoni and the other, you know, people at the top, but the people, you know, who were in the cast and things. It is really nice to see. And it's a very positive the way they're all talking about the show, and it's really cool. Like, Deanna Lee Inosanto, who plays Morgan Elspeth, had a lovely little letter about it, and Iman Esfandi, who plays Ezra, has been posting constantly right. since the strike ended. He hasn't stopped.
Yeah,
he's still going.
He's so happy about it. I just love that. Like,
I mean, I'm not complaining because I like seeing his face. Mm-hmm. A lot. However, it is nice to see them getting to celebrate the show that they
right,
made.
Right, right.
That is cool. I also started watching Young Jedi Adventures this week, finally.
Oh, I forgot that was a thing.
That's a thing. I've watched a couple episodes. It's cute.
Yeah, I don't have kids, so it's not something that interests me.
We're not going to cover it. definitely, for sure.
No, we're going to do
fuck
an
am
in-depth
I gonna say
analysis.
Okay,
a breakdown minute by minute of every single episode of this 11-minute show.
It's literally like the most basic, like, the show is literally for like 6-year-olds.
Of course.
So it's the most basic plots about the main characters learn a lesson about working together. They learn a lesson about showing compassion. And it's like, it's adorable. It just puts me in a good mood every time I watch this show, because I'm like, gosh, I love when people are happy, which makes the inclusion of some of the characters from the High Republic books very I feel conflicted knowing what happens to some of these characters. And I'm like, ooh. Children, do not Google what happens to these characters.
Yeah, that is an odd choice for them to do. Like, look, I have no idea what happens to any of these characters because I only read Light of the Jedi, but I think it's funny when they have these characters on here, and I know that there's some like pretty awful stuff that you've hinted about, or I've heard you talk about on other things. And it's like, why would they include that character if something that dramatically awful is going to happen to them later on? Like, it just seems weird.
You know what I was really struck by, though, which was really interesting? Because I'm not to it yet, but I watched a clip of some of the characters.
Yeah.
And the voices sound a lot like they sound on the audiobook.
Oh, like maybe like the audio dramas or like the actual
audiobook. The audiobook by Mark Thompson. Like, I was I was expecting completely different vocal performances.
Yeah.
But they're pretty close. And I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, so the show can have better vocal continuity than the audiobooks themselves. Okay, sure. Why not? That was my digression to talk about Young Jedi Adventures, but we don't have time to necessarily get into all of that. So now for something that is definitely not intended for children.
Right.
Because my God. Yes. So because the SAG-AFTRA strikes were going on, we were covering Darth Vader's 2017 run by Charles Soule. And now that the strikes are over, we are going to finish that out. So last time we talked about Burning Seas, issues 1-3. Today we are picking up right where we left off and covering Burning Seas, issues 4 and 5, and also Bad Ground we're going to be covering today. I'm not going to do another intro. We already did likes and dislikes. We already did who wrote. So we are just going to dive directly into Burning Seas Part 4.
Well, we don't want to dive into a burning sea. That would be bad, but...
No, we saw in issue number 3 that would be not particularly fun. So, when last we left our heroes, and I use the word heroes in giant air quotes, Darth Vader and the Inquisitorius had discovered, thanks to King Lee Char, the location of the Jedi who was hanging out there, Farron Barr, and had set off to go and kill him. Meanwhile, the Mon Cala are putting up a resistance to Tarkin's invasion, with Jeal Akbar commanding the resistance in the north, and Admiral Raddus having been given command of the south. That was where we left off. Issue number 4. Farron Barr and his people are trying to escape. It goes badly. Most of them die. We get their tragic backstories as they're dying. Barr eventually runs into a dead end, but before he does that, Tarkin is like, well, shit. We're not really getting our asses handed to us, but we're not winning this as quickly as we need to be, and the resistance they're putting up is actually pretty big. So he calls up Vader, and he's like, hey, Vader, personal favor, can you go and kill the king? Or capture the king. And Vader is like, you don't order me. And Tarkin is like, well, no, it's a request and I would owe you a favor. Please consider doing it. And Vader is like, well, literally, since you ask so nicely, Inquisitors, go deal with Barr. I'm going after the king. Just fucking leaves them. The Inquisitors roll up on Barr, and Barr reveals that not only are the Purge Troopers clone troopers, but they're newly minted clone troopers. And then he activates Order 66 after pointing out that the Inquisitors are still technically Jedi. End of issue. Bradley's just sort of nodding along like,
I mean, it's like, what do you
got it.
Like, yeah, this was pretty much, I mean, just to give a quick opinion of this, it's literally like, I don't want to say it's the climax of the arc, but it's definitely the most exciting part. I mean, it just, or it could, I guess it could be a considered like a climax part. I don't know. It's the ending of it is just so iconic. So I don't know. I found that
the,
it was so
the
good.
Order 66.
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
If we're breaking it down like in screenplay terms, which is not really fair to it, because it's not written that way.
Like,
but if
movie,
you're looking,
right? Yeah, yeah.
If you're trying to break it into a 3-act structure, we're in act 3.
Right.
Like, we've hit act 3 and there's sort of a turning point leading into the climax, and that's the end of the leading up to the climax, and then we get into the climax itself. So I was going to go through every single tragic backstory in this issue, and I started taking my notes as if I was going to do that, and then I realized just everyone gets a tragic backstory and they're all kind of the same.
Yeah, I noticed that. They were all pretty much identical.
They were all pretty similar.
They weren't the same, but like, they were pretty close. I mean, it was all like, we're oppressed. Like, this is bad. Like, you can help us stop the oppressors, like, kind of thing. Like,
well, it's interesting because I more wanted to talk about my overall note for why we're getting these flashbacks and what these flashbacks are saying.
Sure.
And it's the idea that the point of this issue is how the oppressive fascist state, the Empire, radicalizes people purely by existing and purely by just going about its day-to-day life. I'm reminded of one of the Mortal Kombat movies, and the movie, I think, has Ming-Na Wen in it. But there's a scene where two characters are talking, and one of them is like, has declared the other one like their sole enemy and dedicated their life to hunting them. And that's one of the good guys. And the good guy's like, finally confronts this guy, the bad guy, and is like, you know, you came to my village and burned it down and killed my family. And the bad guy's like, I don't remember any of that. Because for you, that was the most important day of your life. But for me, Tuesday. And it's just like, he goes out and he does his thing and he radicalizes these people along the way and inspires them to fight back and never takes any real notice of it because this system doesn't really care about the individual people. The commonality in each of these stories is the Empire is just kind of doing its thing and these people get crushed under it. And so they all decide in one way or another, when they're offered by Farron Barr this chance, they're going to fight back, which I think is an interesting angle to take with it, particularly as they're all just fucking dying.
Yeah.
brutally.
It sucks because actually, what's funny is now that we can talk about visual media more, actually, when I was looking at this like crew as they were dying, I was thinking like it reminded me of the Andor crew a little bit, like just each of the characters. I felt like they would fit really well in the Andor kind of like story. Like they were like, oh, they clearly all have like issues with the Empire and they all like want to like do their part kind of thing
You mean
with
the
the
Rogue One
Resistance.
crew? I get that Andor is like the best thing to ever happen to Star Wars visual media, but yes, it is very Rogue One
You know what I
crew.
mean, though. Like it's that Andor and Rogue One are so, you know, they're the same.
They're parts one and three of the same story. We're just waiting on part two.
But it just feels like they belong in that section, in that time of the story, of the overall story. They belong in that little area. And I think it would be really cool to see something like that, especially, you know, as season two comes, you know, let's see, maybe they'll do something similar, but
I think it's interesting because they're almost kind of too early.
yeah.
Like, a lot of the overall theme of this and a lot of what's happening is that we don't have, like, the Alliance to Restore the Republic. We don't have a really strong rebellion that has cropped up as a viable alternative to the Empire. And so groups like this are going to be wiped out because it's super easy because we don't have Bail Organa and Ahsoka running around trying to get the disparate groups to work together. We don't have Mon Mothma as that rallying point yet for people to rally around in the Alliance to Restore the Republic. So of course groups like this are just going to get wiped out because we're not at a point where organized resistance is a thing that can actually happen. The most interesting one I thought, and it's skipping ahead a little bit, but we do see one of them, Darren. We see that he joins up because they're lying about the Jedi and they wiped out the Jedi. And also, a Jedi saved him once during the Clone Wars when he was a kid. But surprise, it's Anakin Skywalker.
I like how
Oops.
I wonder. Does Barr know all of their backstories, or does he just know like the part where he
He
meets
knows
them in the
all of them. He
backstory?
knows all of them.
So does
Presumably,
he?
he knows all of them, and they told him because he's referencing their backstories when he recruits them.
Gotcha. But you don't think he knows that he was saved exactly by Anakin Skywalker? Like he might have just been said like, oh, a Jedi saved me. Like he doesn't
Yeah, it's
know the name.
possible he doesn't know specifically because the kid probably didn't know specifically it was Anakin
Right, right,
Skywalker.
right.
Or didn't remember because I think Anakin does introduce himself. He's like, I'm Anakin Skywalker. I don't know, we don't get a lot of time with these people to really dive into that.
Right. It's only like one flash, one panel each, and then it's like, okay, back to reality.
So let's talk about Admiral Raddus
Okay.
because this is fucking brilliant what he does. So Raddus has a bunch of ships that have shielding that's designed not for bombardment. The ships individually are too weak to repel firepower bombardment from the Empire. The shields are more designed for deep space travel and also repelling pirate attacks. But if you put all the ships next to each other and you put all the shields on top of each other, suddenly the shield gets a lot stronger. That's fucking brilliant on a number of levels. One, it's a good strategy. Two, it's kind of thematic for the rebellion itself. A lot of the theme work with the rebellion in general, and also like with this particular Mon Cala story, is talking about how the more unified a group of people is, the more they're going to be able to resist. This is a literal visual representation of that theme, which I think is very, very cool. So there's a scene where Tarkin calls Vader and is like, can you please go get the king? I love this conversation between the two because it shows how Tarkin's one of the few people that actually knows how to talk to Vader and get him to do what he wants.
Right. He's not necessarily commanding him because, like, any other Imperial officer would have been like, no, I'm an Imperial officer. I tell you what to do because I'm an Imperial officer. But Tarkin knows that he's never going to listen to him unless he reasons with him on his level.
Right, and the Sith as an ideology respects strength, and it's a twisted kind of respect-based sort of thing that they do, where the stronger you are, the more they're going to respect you. It's very twisted, but we clearly see in A New Hope, Vader respects Tarkin a great deal. And we see this because Tarkin is actually able to give Vader orders in A New Hope. And we're seeing kind of the genesis of how that works, to where Tarkin, unlike the other Imperial officers, Tarkin makes an effort to understand other people around him. We will see in a later thing we're going to discuss that he's very good at analyzing. He's very good at methodically picking something apart in his brain. We also see this a little bit in the Tarkin novel as well, which is a lot about the relationship between Vader and Tarkin. But he knows how to come to Vader and get Vader to do what he wants. And the way is to be like, yes, I know that I can't give you commands, but here's what I need you to do, why I need you to do it, please consider doing it. And of course, Vader's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I'm going to go do the thing. So I do love that a lot. So the Inquisitors corner Farrenbar, and he calls them by their names. We know that the Ninth Sister is Mesaana Tide, but here we find out that the Sixth Brother's real name is Bill Valen. He has not appeared in anything else really that I could find. So we don't get to see him as Bill Valen, but does identify the 10th brother as Prosit Dibs. Remember how I talked about we'd talk about the 10th brother a little bit later?
You did tease that last week.
Later is now. This is not the first appearance of Prosit Dibs.
Okay.
Prosit Dibs has first appeared in a little miniseries called Mace Windu, Jedi of the Republic, which was written by Matt Owens. That came out in around 2017. So clearly these were in development close to the same time. And he was a character in that that wound up being sort of an antagonist.
So it looks like the running theme here is that the Inquisitors are all like from other stuff, but like they kind of slid them into other things like secretly or other projects, like, and then been yes. Like, hey, let's just put them all in here.
Most of the Inquisitors that we've seen thus far, we've seen somewhere else.
Right.
So either we saw them in Rebels, or we saw them in Jedi of the Republic, Mace Windu, or we were going to see them in Jedi Fallen Order.
Right.
Because remember, this came out prior to Fallen Order coming out. And there's later some Inquisitors we're going to run into next week. I'm confident that it's next week. That we will find out about later on.
Okay.
There's your tease for what's coming up. We have also already talked about them.
Right.
I've also talked about them on a totally different podcast. And now
ad
this
nauseam.
Is it. Ad nauseum.
Right.
Did you listen to that episode, Bradley? Because if so, I apologize.
I haven't listened to it yet. I actually do want to listen to it, though, because I actually understand the content so that you're going to be talking about. So I feel like I can... when you're talking about the thing you're supposed to be talking about. When you go on tangents, maybe not so much.
And but... Meg does not cut the tangents out, by the way. If you want to hear what I sound like before Bradley edits all the tangents out, that's the episode you want to go listen to.
Good to know.
So that was our additional information on the 10th brother and what we have learned. And this was the reveal that he was Prosit Dibs. There was no indication of this prior.
Right.
I find it interesting. I'm so glad we can talk about the visual media more directly now. Farrenbar is kind of the anti-Kanan Jarrus.
Mm.
In that Kanan Jarrus's reaction to being a Padawan who lost his master and being on the run was to shut down and completely deny who he was for years and years and years and years. Farrenbar got it into his head that he was going to reform the Jedi Order and bring down the Empire, and then proceeded to muck it all up.
He has a savior complex. He's like,
he's got like a savior complex. He doesn't have the like the emotional maturity to know what he's doing. Like, we find out he was a Padawan that never graduated up to the rank of knight. Like, he hadn't even finished.
Oh wow!
Prior to this happening. So, and clearly we'll see in the next issue, he has some interesting ideas about what he's allowed to do. So I find that really interesting to compare him to Kanan Jarrus. Also, the Purge Troopers are clones. We find out that these particular ones are clone troopers.
I also love how he dramatically reveals this fact, by the way. Instead of like, I don't know, choking them all and like moving them or, you know what I mean? Or like doing something with the Force to like make them inert and not a threat. He's just like, no, no, no. I want the dramatic face reveal instead that they're clones.
Yep. He has to yank all of their helmets off to dramatically unmask them like he's in Scooby fucking Doo or something.
Exactly.
However, there is a point because then he's like, well, these are clearly very new clones who weren't around for the events of Revenge of the Sith. So execute Order 66.
I also want to know how. Okay,
there's how does
so
that
many...
how did that work?
How does that work? Because like, okay.
That's my next note in the beginning of issue 5 is how the fuck did that work?
Okay,
we'll get to it.
Okay.
Well, I guess we can get to it now. Now we'll bleed over the two issues a little bit. It looks like it's supposed to be that he kind of does a mind trick type thing. Because we see him holding his hand out.
Right.
And kind of a thing. And he's sort of doing something with the Force to influence them. But also, I guess retroactively, we can intuit that because they were not present for Revenge of the Sith, their inhibitor chips never went off.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And we saw in the Bad Batch that the inhibitor chips start to wear off after time. They're really potent when you first activate them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a gray area. But I like the idea that, yeah, he uses the Force to do it. Like, it's more of a mind trick rather than...
It's kind of half mind trick, half inhibitor chip kind of thing going on.
Because I feel like it would just doesn't make sense in that they would even bother putting the inhibitor chips in them if they're not needed to destroy the Jedi anymore. I don't know. It just seems like a weird...
Well, presumably... Presumably Palpatine didn't know that, like, when exactly the Order 66 was going to go off. So they would have been raised like normal clones. Presumably there's some of the newer clones that we see, maybe the ones who were in the simulations but hadn't been released out to combat yet.
Got it. Okay.
Like, again, this is one of those things where this predates the Bad Batch by a number of years, so we kind of have to squint our eyes a little bit and make things work.
Gotcha. Yeah, we didn't find all of the Jedi texts that were hidden in the temple yet. We only got part of the story, so the mythology has changed slightly.
Right. Well, and it's a mythology and not a history, and things are not going to 100% line up, like, all of the time. And that's just a thing you have to accept with Star Wars, and one thing I think Star Wars has kind of leaned into a little bit. I posted on Twitter, like, about a week before recording this, but it's available if people want it. I put all of the High Republic Phase 1 in chronological order, chapter by chapter and issue by issue. And I noticed that there were some moments where it didn't line up. And that didn't dampen my enjoyment of it, because overall, it's a very cohesive linear story. It's just because it's a mythology, different versions of the same story are not necessarily going to line up. And it's just a thing you have to learn to deal with Star Wars. So people saying X breaks canon because it contradicts Y, I mean, not necessarily. You have to kind of squint with some things. Studying this stuff is almost a field of mythological studies on its own.
I'm surprised no one's, like, taught, like, the history and mythology of Star Wars in college, like, some kind of, like...
So, I know there was a teacher that I was following on TikTok, and I don't know if she's still doing the content, but she did teach a class to her high schoolers, I think, about Star Wars as mythology.
That would be an interesting... Actually, I don't want to give this idea to somebody, but I feel like, you know what, if you have the time and you want to do it, great. You could steal my idea. Start a TikTok and do the history of Star Wars and literally do a timeline of, like, everything. Like, just pick a date and just start from that date and then, like, the very first date we know, and then just go for it and then just make TikToks on everything.
So Star Wars Explained on YouTube every year does the canon roundup, which I enjoy watching. He will put everything we have in canon in order. And these videos are like 50, 55 minutes long.
I don't have that kind of time. I'm talking about like 2 minutes max.
You want bite-sized chunks.
Oh, yeah. No, I want somebody to be like, here's the event that happened in this year or whatever. Like something like that.
I've seen that. That's what he does. I've seen a lot of like Star Wars as history, Star Wars as literature. I wish I saw more content on Star Wars as mythology.
Yeah.
I feel like not a lot of people approach it from that angle. We need to move on to issue 5. Issue number 5, issue number 17, Burning Seas Part 5. The clone trooper Gambit works, and they start shooting the fuck out of the Inquisitors, and they shoot the fuck out of the 10th brother, and he dies. Both Farrenbar and Verla escape. Farrenbar goes after the king, Verla disappears, we'll get to where she went in a minute. The 6th brother slices off the Night Sister's leg, just to be a dick, and escapes. She also presumably deals with the clone troopers, because she's clearly still alive. Meanwhile, Vader shows up, he has a duel with Farrenbar. Well, no, he gets the king first, and the king is like, I'm not surrendering shit. And Tarkin's like, okay, I'm gonna start bombing the fuck out of your planet. And the king's like, I'm still not surrendering shit. Farrenbar shows up, Vader gets him to reveal that he was the one that actually assassinated the ambassador and caused the entire thing. And the king is like, well, fuck, I feel betrayed, so I'm gonna order all of my people to stand down. And Tarkin's like, that's so cute, I'm gonna keep bombarding the planet. Radis is like, fuck this, I'm out, takes his entire fleet and escapes into hyperspace. And the Empire has control of Mon Cala, control of the king. They are now the occupiers of the planet. End of issue 5. Also, Farrenbar fucking dies. End of issue 5. R.I.P. to the 10th brother.
Yeah, again, I think I said this in the last episode. I don't like introducing a character, and this is what I didn't like about the arc.
Immediately killing him.
And immediately dies. Like, I hate that. That makes me so angry with some of the stuff Star Wars does, and I have my thoughts on a certain Inquisitor character in Ahsoka that randomly is introduced and then just presumably dies in the middle of the season and for no reason whatsoever, and then is nothing.
The Divas while covering Light of the Jedi, because Charles Soule loves to do this. Charles Soule is the writer of these comics. Charles Soule loves to do this. And he's also really good at it. The Divas literally have a counter for Light of the Jedi. It's like, I really like this character. I hope they survive the chapter counter. So you get a ding on the counter if they introduce a random character that you really like. And they get another ding if that character does not survive the chapter.
Right.
Because that happens a lot in Charles Soule stuff. Just the whole last issue was a massive ding because we literally get introduced to characters as they're getting slaughtered by the Inquisitors. It's great. A character who survives is Verla. Verla, we find out, is the only one of Ferenbar's people who was actually force sensitive, and she actually escapes. She turns up again in Star Wars 2020, also written by Charles Soule. She has interactions with Luke Skywalker. Oh. And as of Star Wars 2020 number 6, as far as I can tell, she's still alive.
Okay.
In the comics.
So maybe she joins the path or something or some.
Well, kind of... no, she was hanging out like by herself. And this is also post-path. So
we don't know how long the path is going on for.
That's a good question, because as far as we know from Obi-Wan Kenobi, it's still around. Right. A lot of the path got wiped out on Jeddah. Okay, in fine. Jedi Survivor, but like bits of it are still around. No, she was basically just hanging out on Mon Cala for like 20 years, and then, or she went somewhere else. I'm just sort of reading it. I know she meets Luke Skywalker. I know some stuff happens. She's still alive at the end of it, so we don't really know what's going on with her. But she does turn up again, because Sir Charles Soule likes to reference his own stuff. For example, there's a planet prominently featured in the High Republic that was first introduced in the Star Wars comics. Like, so that's a thing he does. I love how the sixth brother slices off the Night Sister's leg and like, just have fun dealing with the clone troopers.
Well, what's funny, I don't know when this takes place in the timeline of stories, but I just thought it was really funny because I was like, oh, he has to cut off her leg so he can survive and go to the Ahsoka novel real quick.
Yeah, I think this is the last, let me check and see. This is the last we see him in this book, or this comic.
This comic? Oh, okay.
He's so done maybe after this.
Maybe he's going to play with Ahsoka for a little bit.
Yeah, he goes off to go be in the Ahsoka novel. I don't know if that novel is going to be referenced. I don't think it will be referenced at all in the context of the comic. But yeah, this is the last we see of him.
Yeah, because I can't remember in the story, because he talks about how like he's got to hurry up and find her before the other ones show up and steal his bounty. But if they're clearly preoccupied with the events of whatever's going on here, then maybe they never were going to show up anyway.
Ahsoka, let me see when exactly Ahsoka takes place. Ahsoka takes place in 18 BBY, kind of. I don't know. Timeline is weird because this is supposed to be 3 years later and he's still alive. I'm not sure. I imagine the Ahsoka novel is probably happening around the same time.
Yeah, that's my headcanon work. It would work. So there you go.
Yeah, it's happening like literally right after this.
Sure.
But yes, he has to run off to go do that. And I like that the Inquisitors are constantly screwing each other over in this pale imitation of what the Sith can actually do.
Also, I don't know if another canonical thing, because we talked about her eye being missing in the first thing in the video game. Is her leg also missing in the video game?
I do not think so. Let me check. Masana Tide.
I mean, maybe she's wearing shoes. I don't know, but it looks like she never wears shoes. So I just want
to... I mean, she's wearing pants, so presumably it's under there. Like, it's under
right.
Let me look. From what I can tell, yeah, she has a mechanical leg. So Tarkin's plan, right, is he basically has Vader drag Lee Char over to the window and just start bombing the shit out of his people, which is a very Tarkin thing to do, because you got to remember the Tarkin doctrine is all about fear. It's all about ruling through fear. And part of fear is you have to demonstrate what you are willing to do. So we're seeing on a macro scale what Tarkin is going to attempt with later on with Alderaan. This is exactly what he's going to do. He's going to have Vader drag somebody over to the window. He's going to blow up all of her people. And he's going to think that that's going to cow them into submission. It does not. Just like with Alderaan, it does not. Lee Char was fully prepared to resist until he found out Ferenbar was behind the assassination attempt. Speaking of Ferenbar being behind the assassination attempt, once again, a running theme of this This arc, and in fact, this entire series, is the pride of the Jedi is their undoing. And even the masters that Vader fought, Killick, Infilla, and Jocasta Nu, had tempered it to an extent. Ferran Bard didn't have the training to do that. So once he was outside the confines of the Jedi Order, that pride ran rampant. And when he saw, like, a vision of the future, he took it upon himself to make that vision happen, regardless of how many people he had to kill along the way. Charles Soule's such a good goddamn writer.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he, not that he sacrificed the other people, but like they clearly died in the escape. And it was kind of more to him like, well, it is what it is kind of thing. Like it wasn't like he was necessarily saddened by the passing of all these people. He was just kind of like, well, you know, it's for the greater good kind of thing. Like, or for the, my overall thing that I'm trying to, my goal I'm trying to accomplish, it's okay that they died in service to that.
Right. And he has a line later on where he's giving his like almost kind of villain monologue at the end. And he's talking about like, you know, I let billions die to inspire trillions. And it's like, that's a really fucked up way to look at this. That's a really fucked up, it's almost kind of a commentary too on how living under an authoritarian state like this and having to resist takes you to some dark places mentally and lets you justify a lot of dark things mentally. Like we see it too with like Saw Gerrera. When we get to him, he will kind of do the same thing to where he will justify some really fucked up stuff. Not to this scale. I think even Saw Gerrera would be like, this is a little much. But in things like Rebel Rising and or in The Bad Batch, we see that Saw Gerrera is perfectly willing to go to extremes and justify it with this same justification. And Lee Char really misunderstood that. He really misunderstood Tarkin. Like he calls Tarkin's like, call off the bombardment. And Tarkin's like, yeah, I think I will not do that.
Right.
But nice try though. Lee Char really was just, he was in the same boat. He was a young idealist. He had a certain conception of the Jedi. He had a certain conception of war. And these things did not pan out. And it ended up going really badly for him. And he ended up losing and having to hand his planet over to the Empire. My next note is LMAO by Raddus.
He's like, I am not doing this. I am getting out of here. This is ridiculous.
It's very Rogue One Raddus, to where he's very, I recognize the council has made a decision, but given that it is a stupid ass decision, I have elected to ignore it.
Right. And I also like how his plan is really like, okay, well, if we all escape at the same time, then most of us might be able to get out if we're lucky. Like,
again, it's going back to the rebellion is stronger when they work together, when they're a unified front and when they're protecting each other, because that's how Raddus manages to get out. And yes, you could look at this as a little bit of cannon welding. To say that's explaining, because Star Wars 2020 had an arc that explained how they got the Mon Cala cruisers. Whereas we see that there's a Mon Cala cruiser in Rogue One.
Right.
So this kind of explains how that happened. But also, because Charles Soule is such a good goddamn writer, it welds the whole thing together, but it also makes a thematic statement about rebellion. It's perfectly in keeping with Raddus's character that we see in Rogue One, and it's just really good.
Right, because like, I guess if you know, if you're smart enough, like you don't have to be like, oh, I need a reason why they have Mon Calamari ships like in the Resistance. Like you could just be like, they just have them. You know what I mean? Like there doesn't have to be an explanation why they have them. You could just be like, they just got them from wherever. But I like that there is thematic things that tie it into why they exist or why they have it there. It does make it like, it's like nice poetry because it's like there, but I feel like it's not 100% necessary, but it's great that it is.
Yes. It's nice when things can both accomplish welding things together and also be good writing on their own. Because it's so subtle, you almost don't notice it. That's what I like about it. It's almost so subtle that you don't notice that it's going on. My final note for these issues before we get into Bad Ground is the little speech at the end ending with "There is only the Empire." I just really like that line as an ending. Yeah. I like that we get a little montage of just how dark things are for Mon Cala at the end. So as a coda to this, we have issue number 18 of Darth Vader. Now issue number 18 is called Bad Ground. It largely stands on its own, but it kind of follows up on the conversation Tarkin and Vader have. We already did the credits for issue number, the Burning Seas, but really fast. Credits for this, it's written by Charles Soule, penciled by Giuseppe Camuncoli, inkers Danielle Orlandini, and the letterer is Joe Caramagna, and the colorist was David Curiel. That's who wrote this issue. We won't do one like and dislike. Bradley, what did you think of Bad Ground, the one shot in the middle?
I didn't mind it. I actually liked that it was Tarkin-centered instead of Vader-centered, really. Vader was more of just this looming monster thing in the... It's almost like Alien versus Predator a little bit, like, or not even Alien versus Predator, just like the Predator. Like, it's almost like the same kind of story. Like, he's the Predator and he's hunting them, but they're also hunting him kind of thing. I kind of like that. I like how he picks them off, you know, essentially a little bit as the story goes. And at Tarkin, it's funny because Tarkin knows the whole time the point of all of this. So all right. These people are so expendable to him, which is also terrifying and amazing at the same time for his character, because it's just like he knows what he's doing and he's sacrificing all these people anyway, just for, I guess, just enjoyment, really. Or not even enjoyment, but just like just for fun, because Vader's just like, I just wanted to test myself.
Yeah, I love this. As a one-shot, I love Tarkin as a character. I think he's an asshole, but he's a very specific type of asshole. We've gotten in his head a few times, and I really like the way canon writes him. One of the best Tarkin stuff I read from Legends was the novel Death Star. And I think canon Tarkin in the Tarkin novel, and then again in this, is really following on those footsteps. It's not excusing any of what he does, it's explaining why he does that, which I find is a really fascinating way to approach a villain. So, briefly, if you haven't read Bad Ground, or you need a summary, Tarkin has a bunch of hunters on a random planet. They are hunting Darth Vader, trying to kill him. Meanwhile, Vader is murdering the shit out of all of the hunters. There is some cat and mouse back and forth. There are some other hunters with Tarkin, they all die. Tarkin eventually lures Vader into a trap, has him struck by lightning, and that demonstrates what Vader wanted. Vader force chokes Tarkin but lets him go, and eventually they get rescued, and that is the end of the issue. So The Most Dangerous Game is a short story from 1924. The premise is it's a guy that hunts people for sport. This issue very much gives me Most Dangerous Game vibes, just in terms of the most dangerous game is in fact human beings, is the point of the story. So I found that really interesting. And also, again, Charles Soule demonstrating his understanding of canon and his understanding of these characters. We know from Tarkin, the novel Tarkin, that Tarkin is from a hunter culture. Eriadu is a big, like, hunting culture. That's big for them. So of course, the idea of having Tarkin participate in this kind of Most Dangerous Game style hunting Vader is a really fun thing to do with the character, and ties back into, it's very rewarding if you know Tarkin as a character.
Right.
Okay, I've put this off long enough. Let's talk about the flamethrower scene.
I knew you were going to bring this up. Okay.
Let's talk about... So there's a point where Tarkin's like, okay, I need to flamethrower this bitch.
Of course.
Because he can block blaster bolts, so let me hit him with a bunch of flamethrowers. This does not go well. They do nothing.
Right.
The only impact they have on Vader is he mildly gets scared because he's scared of fire. And then he's like, then he blows up the flamethrower tanks, and everyone who is using them fucking dies.
I love it.
So that would be a ding on the flamethrower's fucking useless counter. Four of them, in fact.
It burned away his cape. So
it
I
did
guess
burn
that,
away his cape.
So I guess it kind of did something. It changed his outfit slightly.
Uh-huh. And so then he has to go and kill like an apex predator because he's fucking Darth Vader.
Of course.
Like, obviously he's fucking Darth Vader. So he's going to go out and find the biggest, nastiest thing and wear its skin as a cape.
The fact that he even has to have it as a cape.
Clearly. He's like, I have to have a cape. Let me find the most badass cape I can.
Right.
I do love the panel, and it echoes the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. There's a panel where like Vader's like got fire reflected in his visor. I do think that's a really neat panel. Vader ambushes the camp at one point, and the way he pulls this off, because they have a Chandra fan with them, and the Chandra fan can hear really well, so they're tracking Vader by his breathing, he turns off the breathing apparatus. He stops being able to breathe in order to sneak up on them.
Right.
And I'm just reminded, you know the infamous hallway shot in Rogue One where he appears in the dark?
Of course.
So it has been pointed out that the little lights on his chest, that's his life support.
Okay.
When he walks up in the dark and he kind of breathes for a little bit and then he stops breathing and then the lightsaber appears, Those lights are off. He turned off his breathing apparatus when he was walking up to the rebels, purely to make a dramatic entrance.
He is the icon. He is the moment.
On top of that, it was also pointed out that there's no air in space. So the bit where he's walking up watching the Tanaviv 4 like speed away and his cape is billowing backwards, he would have had to do that himself with the Force. I love how dramatic this man is at all times.
Always.
We do find out that Tarkin getting his guys together and hunting Vader, that was what Vader asked. So remember back in Burning Seas where he was like, Tarkin's like, if you go get Kingly Char, I'll owe you a favor. This was the favor.
Right.
Which is interesting that both Vader cashed in the favor and also that Tarkin was a man of his word. And Grand Moff Tarkin, one of the most powerful men in the Empire, agreed to do this incredibly dangerous thing because he's like, well, I said I'd do it. It's interesting that Tarkin has a sense of honor, which we do see. I don't want to talk about Light of the Jedi too much, but we do see that is an Eriadu thing. We also find out that they mention that there's few Jedi that remain. So we're already at the point where we were in Inquisitor Rise of the Red Blade, where they're like, there's not a lot of Jedi left for us to hunt. What are we going to do?
Just try to kill each other, I guess.
Try to kill each other, I suppose.
I'm bored. I want people to hunt me.
Well, it's interesting because that gets into my final note, which is thinking about the relationship between Vader and Tarkin. A lot of Tarkin's inner monologue is him trying to work out why Vader had him do this. And he speculates a little bit on like, well, maybe it's because Vader is the Emperor's primary hunter and he wanted to understand what it was to be hunted. Vader never tells him. Tarkin never asks. He speculates internally, but he never just comes out and asks. Which I think the relationship between these two baddies is interesting and I like it a lot. Well, Bradley, do you have any final thoughts on Burning Seas parts 4 and 5 are bad ground?
Burning Seas was definitely my favorite so far. I loved, the scenes. I loved the actual story. I like the Inquisitors, all the, everything that they've done. I think so far this was like the strongest arc. I thought it was just showed a lot of the relationship of of course, Tarkin and Vader, even combining backgrounds as like a nice little top off to that story. Yeah, I thought it was great. I don't think they could have done any differently that I would have been like, oh yeah, this would have made it better. So I think so far this has been a pretty solid like story arc and I like it. But yeah, and I thought backgrounds was a little random at the end, but I see now that you've connected it to their conversation more, it makes more sense. I don't know if it was necessarily needed at all in the grand scheme of things, if they just for some reason needed an extra issue somewhere, like for another story that we talked about earlier on that probably could have used another issue or two. That's where I probably would have taken it from. I still like this, the bad grounds issue. I just think that it would have served the overall story better to not have it and have the other one longer, maybe that would be a better sacrifice, but I don't know.
Yeah, I thought Burning Seas, it definitely one of the stronger comic arcs just generally over the course of all of comics. And I think that all of these arcs are really good. I do think this one, the only mild criticism I had of it was that Vader doesn't make a lot of choices or do a lot of agency. He's mostly like, he agrees to go do what Tarkin asks, and that's about the only thing. But on the other hand, we kind of didn't need that. We're at a point now with Vader as a character where he's become much more secure in who he is. And a lot of this was concerned about like the Empire overall. It wasn't necessarily concerned with Vader himself, which is why we got a bunch of time with Tarkin and we got a bunch of time with those Imperial officers who all die. It was about like, it was almost a microcosm of the story of Star Wars and exploring some of those themes with rebellion and the grinding oppressive fascism that's taking over the galaxy. I liked it a lot. I too, when I first read it, I didn't quite connect bad ground to it. Now I do, having read it and analyzed it. I'm like, I like that it's a nice little coda, particularly since we're going to go into Fortress Vader and Fortress Vader's our final arc. So I love it a lot. I love the Mon Cala characters. I like that we got a Mon Cala story that wasn't centered around the fight with the Quarren. I like that that didn't play a central role in this. I like we really more nailed down into Jeel Akbar and Admiral Raddus and how these characters are different. And, Lee Char, what ended up happening to him leading into the events of Star Wars 2015. So I like it a lot. I very much enjoyed this. Next time on Gold Squadron Gaze, we are entering Fortress Vader. We are skipping the Darth Vader annual number 2. It really doesn't have anything to do with the main plot. I looked at it. I was like, we can probably skip this and go straight into Fortress Vader.
Okay, cool.
So we will go straight into Fortress Vader. Right now, the tentative plan is to do Fortress Vader parts 1 through 3 next week. We're going to take multiple weeks to cover Fortress Vader because Fortress Vader is a lot.
Okay.
Tentative plan is to do 1 through 3, but we are headed into our final arc.
Okay, cool. I might actually only read 1 through 3. Like, I might not read the whole thing.
That's probably wise.
To like really focus in. Like, I feel like that'll be a good idea. That way I don't know what'll happen.
Fortress Vader's what this has all been building up to. The tentative plan is to do Fortress Vader 1 through 3, then 4 through 6, then 7 in our finale, leading up to the end of the year. But as you know, our plans are constantly changing. They're constantly evolving with new information. Tentatively at the moment, we are going to begin the year with Ahsoka unless SAG-AFTRA goes back on strike. And if somehow that happens, then we will come up with something else. But tentatively, that is the plan right now. Alrighty. Also plugging, For Light and Dice has just entered its second season. If you are not listening to that, that's a TTRPG set in the High Republic era on which I am a cast member. That is DM'd by Chris from Dark Side Divas. And other participants include Hope from Jay Guys and Jedi and Dark Side of the Force, as well as Jess from RuPaul's Pod Race, and our friends Robin and Colton, who you've heard on some of our Legends episodes. Additionally, big shout out to Dark Side of the Force for mentioning us in an article about podcasts covering Legends. That was really very cool. We got a shout out over there for our non-toxic Legends coverage. So if you haven't listened to our Legends episodes that I did while Bradley was busy doing whatever it is Bradley does, definitely go and check out those episodes. And we will definitely be doing more Legends episodes in the future. I got a lot of positive feedback on those episodes. But for now, Bradley, you don't have anything to plug currently airing, right? Because you can do that now.
You know what's funny is now that you say that,
Technically, you could always do that since none of your stuff was under the SAG-AFTRA contract.
That's true.
You're on reality TV. You could always. Now that I think about it,
I guess I could have always plugged stuff.
You could
have
always
I didn't have anything on the air when we were recording, so that's why it was all like in post. I just finished up my one show that I was just working on. I can't say anything about that until next year, so probably won't even mention what that is until probably after we're done with. I mean, it might not even air until after Vision. We're done with Visions, which is crazy. I did 2 seasons back to back, so I won't even be able to talk about all of it.
I do know about this show, and genuinely, it does sound really very interesting.
So I'll talk about that. My other main show that I normally work on actually just aired, I think, last week. I posted about it on my story. So if you're a big Bravo girly, like some people that we know are.
Hi Chris.
So my main show that I work on, Married to Medicine, we just aired our 10th season on Bravo and Peacock. I think you can still watch it. I think you can watch it on Peacock, but yeah, so it's mostly on Bravo, but that just aired its 10th season. We had a really good time shooting that. I was one of the coordinators for that show. For our cast trip, we went to California, so look forward to those episodes. They were fun.
No, Bradley and I did not interact with each other at all while he was in California. I'm going to get that out of the way now.
I wasn't in LA. I was in Sonoma Valley.
Not in LA.
I was in wine country. I didn't go see Charles, unfortunately, but it was a good time. And the show's really good. It's drama. If you love that kind of stuff, like this is kind of the shit you're going to like. So feel free to check that out. I had fun making it. So yeah. That's my promo. I'm finally promoting something once in a while.
Hooray. I love when you actually get a chance to promote something, because I feel like it impacts me so much what you're working on because of scheduling this podcast. Right.
Exactly.
So when people get to hear about it and be like, oh yes, these were actually the shows that Bradley was working on. My favorite was getting to reveal Temptation Island.
Yeah.
Just because of what a pain in the ass Andor was to do. So it finally came out. I was like, there we go. That's what Bradley was doing this whole time.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's all of the pluggables. Go listen to For Light and Dice. Go listen to my episode of Now This Is Lit. And if you're a Bravo girly, go and watch Married to Medicine on Bravo and Peacock. And we can go straight into the socials.
Thank you for listening to Gold Squadron Gaze. Did Charles fuck something up? Send us a message at goldsquadrongaze@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Gold Squad Gaze. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Gold Squadron Gaze. Subscribe to us on YouTube at Gold Squadron Gaze, where we post the podcast as well as exclusive content. Please join us next week and every week for more of Gold Squadron Gaze.
All right, finder.com. Charles found it.
Okay, you're going to bleep that out. You're going to bleep that out. Oh, my Lord. Oh, boy. Yeah, no. That was more feet than I wanted to look at when recording this episode.